Welcome to the Movie Vault. I'm Ben.
I'm Zach.
And today, we bring to you from the ocean and from the hidden jungle. I guess it's sort of a jungle. Black Panther 2. I already messed it up. Black Panther 2. Wait. Black Panther Wakanda Forever.
Two.
The second one. Well, in the movie theater, when I went in, it said Black Panther 2. So that's what got me confused. False advertising.
Yeah.
This is Marvel's probably one of their more difficult things to come out with, because we have to, you know, start off on a sad note. Chadwick Boseman passed away, and this was known well before this movie came out. And it got me emotional in this movie how they addressed it. First with him, with his character passing away at the start of the movie. He had already passed away off screen. And I guess it's crazy. It's been 2 years since he passed away. I had to look that up. I was like, I know, but yeah, it's been 2 years. So this is kind of one of those things where people were like, oh, they're still making this. How are they going to do this? And I think they overall did a good job of handling his death and, you know, kind of paying homage to him, really like making this in his honor. I have to assume that he knew that this was going to be made, as he, I believe Marvel Studio knew that there was at the end of the life, there was a good chance that he was going to pass away. So the good thing about that was that all of this could probably be a little bit hashed out before he actually passed, so that instead of it being something where they're sort of taking from somebody's legacy, it's like kind of adding on to it in a sense, which I appreciate. There's always a lot of controversy when it comes to people passing away in entertainment and using their image and all of that. So it feels good when somebody does it right, I guess. Would you agree?
I agree. Yes, I think with all of the problems that this movie had faced, it did a good job at bringing it together. I'd have to say it's probably Ryan Coogler, if I had to assume.
Yeah.
If I had to put it on one person, you know, he was the Kevin Feige of this production, I think. And I think his distinct style sticks out from the mess that we've had in Phase 4 so far. So this was actually the last movie of Phase 4. She-Hulk was the last show of Phase 4. So way to go out with a bang on both ends.
Yeah, yeah.
One's a bang in a good way, one's in a bad way. I'll let you take a guess. But so, yeah, I do agree. I think the internet has said that this is probably the best movie in Phase 4. I think some people would still say, you know, Spider-Man No Way Home would be the best. Mm. I still loved that movie. I really did. But I think I enjoyed this movie better. I think it was a better character movie. I think it was just overall a better, more emotional experience than the other movies, even Spider-Man No Way Home. And I know for some people they're cringing. They're like, wasn't it so emotional when they came through the portal and all the Spider-Men went together? Yes, but I knew that was happening. I did not expect a lot of things that were happening in this movie. But yeah, I guess what we could start with is kind of the challenges that it had to overcome, and then from that, what did it accomplish?
Right.
So obviously the first thing you said, you know, Chadwick is dead. What do you do? We've talked about this. What do you do when your main character dies and your main character is the titular character?
Right. This is not just like, so Star Wars sort of had this thing when Carrie Fisher died, and the way they handled it was a little odd, I have to say, but she at least was still not the main character of the movie. So this is a pretty rare scenario. I don't even know that there's something you could compare it to. I'm sure there is, but it's just, there's not something that really just sticks out to me that has happened recently. If there is,
Jumanji.
I don't know. Yeah, I think
Robin Williams.
I guess
died.
Robin Williams. Yeah.
But then it was like 10 years, it was 20
like,
years later.
It was like after, well after, So, yeah, I mean, this is not usually a scenario that you have to think about, especially with somebody who was so young when they passed away. That's usually, leading roles are not played by older people unless you're Harrison Ford. and he is apparently will never die. So, yeah, just strange the thing. But I guess with how big Marvel is, it's like at some point something like this was going to happen. It's kind of shocking, like, this was the biggest moment for Marvel, maybe other than Endgame, would you say? Black Panther?
The original Black Panther.
The original, the first Black Panther movie.
You mean like for cultural phenomenon?
As a cultural phenomenon.
I would say, I'd say it's probably up there with Spider-Man No Way Home. I think Spider-Man No Way Home got a lot of people talking.
True.
But
true.
I would say Infinity War, Endgame, I would say all four Avengers movies still trumped it.
Yeah, of course.
And then I think Civil War trumped it.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, I didn't really remember as much, but yeah, Civil War was a big deal. Yeah, but it's up there in for the sure. Marvel
it's
canon.
It's probably
as
number
being,
five.
As being like a big, huge thing. I remember when it came out, I saw it like 2 months after it came out, and it was still in theaters. And we had to sit in the front row because we didn't order tickets ahead, and it was still like selling out. So it was pretty crazy. So what are some of the other things that?
Well, yeah. So happened? I mean, well, hold on. So the one thing I thought about this is that, you know, so he died on August 28th of 2020. So that's a little bit more than, so that's like what, 26 months ago. So it's like, that wasn't that long ago before they're pooping out this movie in a good way. You know, it's just like, I don't know why I use that analogy. Yeah. But like, it's just like, so Marvel lately, and Ben has said this so many times, like, don't you said this, it's like they're just getting content.
Right.
And for me and you thinking like, okay, this main character is dead. How do you move on with the franchise? What do? You make it about the side characters. I feel like that was pretty obvious. So that's what Ryan Coogler did. Great. But do they still release it in the same time frame? Yes, they did. So it's like they still had these deadlines. They still had to do this. So it's like not only his death, but it's like they still had the original plans, but they had to rework it in a shorter amount of time than they did. This movie came out, their first movie came out in 2018, right?
Right.
In February, February 16th, it came out on my birthday. And the cool thing was that the hard thing was that they had the same release schedule. They didn't push it back. They pushed everything back because of COVID, but they still had the same release schedule for a long time, and they had to figure out how to get it. They had to rewrite the script after his death. Nobody knew. Like, when he died, that's when Ryan Coogler found out.
Unless we're assuming that Ryan Coogler, being in his personal circle, knew that he had was it stage 4 cancer? Or it was, advanced cancer in his colon. Oh, of course. Okay, I won't even read too much into this. But yeah, so there's a lot of, you're either assuming that Ryan Coogler and people at Marvel knew ahead of time, or maybe they didn't know and it was sudden, and then yes. Mm-hmm. So, but either way, it would have been difficult. I guess we can't assume anything, but
yeah,
it was still like they kept it like pretty much on schedule to how it was supposed to be.
But then, so then obviously the next thing was COVID hit. That did push back the release date, but they had the pandemic, everything pushed back. So that's kind of just an added stress on top of that, especially since, so he died in August. So that's like what, 7 months into the, 6 months into COVID, we were 5 months around, and, this is really when people were really freaking out, the end of 2020. This is a lot of the rioting, stuff like that. And this is when he passes away. I remember Ben and we were actually hanging out, and I said, "Oh man, Chadwick Boseman just passed away." We were in David's basement, and they're like, "What?" And I was like, "Yeah." I was like, "That's just so random." We're like, "Man, like, not only are we thinking about all these things going on in the world right now, but that he just died. Like, the one escape that we were thinking about is movies, and he dies." So yeah, there was that, and then there was Letitia Wright refused to get vaccinated for a little bit and on set. So
I forgot about that. Yeah, that was a thing. People didn't like her. Like her though. I'm sure.
No, I think she was the best character in this movie.
No, she was great. Yeah,
but. Apparently it says the Hollywood Reporter reported that Wright had allegedly propagated anti-vaccine and anti-science sentiments on set, but she denied the allegations. But it was too late before the media found out. So,
Who knows what was going on? At any rate, I'll support an actor having their right to free speech. Hollywood does seem a little like, regardless, I won't try to step on too many toes, but like regardless of what you think, Hollywood does tend to be kind of unicentric and not let their actors. It's a little bit ironic, maybe, especially considering who she was.
Oh yeah, it's a cult. We all know.
Movie.
It's a cult.
Yeah, it's a cult. So it doesn't matter who you are; you could be a victim to the cult.
But the next line is best. Although she's clearly no Ezra Miller, Right has a reputation for overzealous anti-science sentiments, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so that was a thing. There was an audience demand to recast T'Challa.
Wait, T'Challa, wait.
There was an audience wait, demanded.
Remind me who T'Challa is.
The Black Panther.
Okay. Because that's... I do know things, all right? All right? It's not
that's
just,
okay.
It was just... I was kind of shocking that there was a demand to do that.
Yeah. So people wanted... some people were like, well, make it Michael B. Jordan.
What? Like, what?
That would make no sense.
What? Those people were just... They had no idea. What? How could you do that?
No, they wanted Killmonger to take the
Killmonger
mantle.
To take the mantle.
But he... I mean, he's more dead than Chadwick.
I mean, that would have been cool, but I don't know how you would explain that at all.
No, he fell off a cliff. He fell off that...
I mean, he got rescued by the underwater people, I guess, maybe.
Sure. But... So, yeah, then that never happened. I think they did the right choice in making nobody take his mantle.
I agree.
Because that's what happens. And then actually one of the elders in the elder... This is an elder-led country, by the way. It's just interesting to think about. One of the elders died. And then, okay, well, the other examples are like Omicron and Ryan Coogler got detained.
Yeah, I was seeing that on Wikipedia. Apparently, like... somebody got him confused with a bank robber. It was like a weird situation, and it was like completely on the bank that it happened.
He was just attempting to withdraw money, and yeah.
How
the bank teller mistook Coogler for a robber, and they handcuffed him and two of his colleagues, and they're held in a police car until the director verified his identity.
This is just so ironic. Like, all of this is irony, because like the guy involved in Black Panther gets detained by Fulvio. Oh my goodness. Like, you can't write this stuff.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I feel bad for him, though. That's not a great situation.
There was also an injury. I know Letitia Wright also got injured for a while, so they stopped production for that.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah. And she's like the star of the movie, so.
Yeah, she's a big role in this.
But yeah, so then once they got their trailer out, everything was on set, and it was a smooth rolling, as we assume.
Yeah, nothing bad happened from that point on.
But I think with all of those challenges, it is quite astounding that we got a 3.5-star movie out of this.
Right, absolutely. And 3.5 stars for Marvel these days, that's a good movie.
Best out of Phase 4, for sure.
I forget. I might have given it 4 stars.
You gave it 3.5.
I gave it 3.5.
I looked, yeah.
I've been trying to guard my excitement for things.
Yeah.
So I'll usually give it low.
From my book.
Because I've been like giving movies 4 stars and then looking back and been like, that was like a 3-star movie. It wasn't that good. Sometimes I get a little overzealous when I first watch something. But yeah, you're right. I think this movie was definitely a success.
Yeah. So now what things did it accomplish? What would you say? What would you say would be the number one best thing that they accomplished?
It accomplished addressing the reaction to the main character's death and developing characters through that, showing how different characters reacted to that, and then ultimately moving not only the storyline of those characters, but also the overall storyline of Marvel through that lens of revenge and responsibility. And what happens when there's a void of power and those sorts of things. And then unrelated to that is sort of this interesting contrast between the Wakandan and, you're going to have to remind me, Talokanian.
No, it's... Wait, hold on. Let me think. It's Kukulkan.
Kukulkan, yes.
Kukulkan.
But what's his nation called? Talokan?
Oh, Talokan.
Sorry. So are they Talokanian?
I don't know. We can call them Atlanteans.
We'll call them Atlanteans.
The DC version.
It's easy. It's easier. But this Atlantis-like country, you know, they have sort of a similar backstory to the Wakandan cultures that they're clearly trying to contrast. And there's this sort of like, what's the right way to react to this and the wrong way to react to it? To these, like, how these countries got established and how they need to protect themselves against other countries. So really, it gets into a lot of like kind of dense, like, philosophical, moral dilemmas that face countries, even though these are like not real countries, but they could represent countries that are
real. They fleshed them out well.
Yeah. And I think they spent a lot of time, in some senses, I don't want to be getting ahead of myself, but I feel like some of the stuff was fleshed out maybe better than the first Black Panther movie.
Okay.
But I haven't seen the first Black Panther in a while, though, so I hesitate to say that because I could be completely wrong.
But it's not a forgettable movie. You could remember most of Black Panther.
No, I remember Black Panther.
So, yeah, I agree. I think for me, the number one thing that it accomplished is continuing the first story with everything that's happened in between, like in between one and two, and making it realistic.
Yeah.
So, obviously, all the other superhero sequels, it's like every movie, it's like reset back to stage one, and the characters are just goofy, you know. It's not, I feel like, especially in the latest movies like Doctor Strange and Thor, I feel like they're the same character at the beginning and the end of the movie. And, you know, but with this movie, it seemed like these characters are actually traumatized. And it has to be this way. The main character's dead. And these characters are traumatized and they're infighting. And the stakes of the first movies still play out in this movie. You still have that Killmonger dilemma that Shuri now has to face. You know, whether to keep your power to yourself or to share it with others and risk it being taken out on your people. And then the question is, who is your people? And Shuri says, well, the people are, I don't know what her actual thoughts were, but she decides to not hurt anyone for the sake of other people and to be willing to sacrifice yourself. So you still have the continuation of the first movie in that way. You know, when Killmonger came back and she went to the ancestral realm and it was Killmonger, I was like, that is genius.
Yeah, it was great.
I was like, I was expecting Ramonda, Queen Ramonda, but it wasn't her. And eventually it was, but I thought that was great because it's like, that brings it full circle, Chadwick's story arc. Because, like, Chadwick was right, and then she follows in T'Challa's footsteps from the first movie, learning from his example to not do what Killmonger was trying to do. So I think that was great. I also think not only continuation from the first movie, but also world building in general. Like we said, Talo Khan was great. Wakanda, we spent a ton of time in Wakanda. The battle was in Wakanda in the end. And I've always wanted a TV show in Wakanda just because I feel like Wakanda is one of the most interesting places in the MCU, if not the most interesting. I'm tired of New York battles. I'm tired of these U.S.-based battles, okay? I'm sick of them. Go somewhere else. And I'm also sick of, like, the major cities of the world being these places of big battles, okay? Go to other places. Like, one of the best parts of Infinity War is the battle on Titan because it was so cool. It was just a different landscape, one that we can't visit and take pictures at. So, yeah, it was just kind of like interesting to see how, like, the Talo Khan, we were talking about this before, like, it's so different than what we expected. And, like, I could see movies taking place in that place.
Yeah.
But Marvel needs to spend their time, stop making so much content, and really flesh out what they have. You know, it's like the kid that is, like, asking for more toys, but it's like, no, Tommy, play with your stupid toys. I'm not buying you a new one. I just bought you a toy last week. And then it's that little brat who keeps wanting more and more and more, you know?
Yeah, because if you think about it, you could never... There's so much stuff, like, we talk about fleshing out. Well, that takes a lot of time. But when you're constantly, like, moving from one thing to the next, like, somebody with, you know, who just can't focus, you're just like... And then you don't have any time to do any of that fleshing out because you're just starting a new story every single time.
Yeah.
So... That would be the main thing. Because, yeah, that's the best thing. I mean, that's what made this movie good. They actually, like, did flesh something out. I like the point you made about Thor and Doctor Strange. In a lot of ways, their characters seem to, like, revert back to who they were in their, like, original movies.
It's like an episode.
Yeah. It's like Rick and Morty. You just start over. They sort of, I guess.
No, they grow more.
They do grow more than these characters. That's a bad representation. Any sort of show that's, like, a... start over at the beginning, Tom
like
and Jerry,
Simpsons.
Or The Simpsons, or Family Guy, or something like that. Whereas this movie, actually, it feels like cohesive. Maybe it's because we didn't actually like see these characters that much from when Black Panther came out. They're sort of in like Infinity War and some movies, but really like minor characters. And so then the next time we really see them is this movie. Mm-hmm. And so there's no other time to like make things confusing or mess up where their character's going because they didn't have to play a major role in those movies. But they may have to play a major role in some upcoming movies. Not sure how they're setting things up, but
sure, it is confusing.
They could end up playing more of a role in whatever they're doing next. Yeah. I mean, they've announced what they're doing next. It's just I've forgotten it. So.
No, but I think a great example of this continuity, and this is Ryan Coogler and how he makes the scripts and stuff. But a great example of this continuation of the first movie is Queen Ramonda, like, fires basically Okoye, right, from her guard.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, like, well, why does she do that? Like, obviously she cares about the queen and the Wakanda. And then one of the elders says, okay, well, aren't you being too rash with her? Like, she literally went up against her husband and that's from the first movie.
Right.
And then she's like, no, when Killmonger took over, she was loyal to him.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So then it's like, okay, well, that obviously, but like in other franchises, nobody would bring anything like that up.
True.
It's like that continuity means something. And it's like, for me, it's like, oh yeah, I assume that we moved on from that because in the other MCU projects, that's what they do. They just move on like that. They
it's
move
like on we to just the next forget thing. About it, yeah.
But the fact that she brought it up and she was so like angry about it means like, okay, that makes it a little bit more realistic and it makes me more engaged. That's what I was, that's the term I was looking for. I was more engaged in this movie than previous movies.
Right.
And the characters are great. I think these side characters especially Shuri got their times to shine.
Yeah, and these were good side characters, but they feel even better now because I feel like even Shuri, like I think I mentioned to Zach like before, I was like, I didn't really like her in the first Black Panther. Like we thought she was kind of conceited and, you know, but she didn't have a lot of time on screen. So there wasn't like a whole lot of time to establish her character. In this movie, you just get a whole different picture, like a lot more time with her on screen, a lot more of like what's going on in her head, what's making her like think these ways. She doesn't just seem like super conceited. You see like kind of the struggles that she's going through, like, and then with the Killmonger dilemma, you can believe, like, based on how she's acted before, that she would be somebody who would like start like maybe getting drawn into that a little bit, like, no, I have to have my revenge and I have to, you know, do these certain things. And I really like to see Winston Duke as M'Baku. Is that how you pronounce his name?
Yeah.
I like him a lot. He's a fun character. He got to play a little bit more of a role. And of course, then we saw Killmonger a little bit. So that was kind of fun. They had him come back in the dream. And that was a great it was like a great like performance for his like 1 minute that he was in the movie. He packed a punch. So definitely a really good cast here. Looking forward to seeing them in the future.
Yeah. So what about Namor?
Namor was great.
Really?
It was good.
Okay.
I think.
Yeah. I agree. What is his name?
The
Tenoch Huerta.
Tenoch Huerta. He's also in Narcos, which is your boy
Pedro Pascal.
Pedro Pascal in Narcos as well.
Is that him? Are you sure?
Oh, Narcos Mexico. It's a different version of Narcos, I think. Spinoff, maybe. Or maybe I don't even know if he's a major character. But yeah, I don't know where this guy's from, but he's pretty good. And he has, his intro is fascinating. Like, there were the whole introduction of these people where they're just like attacking this, like, trying to protect the vibranium for being discovered by the Americans, and they're chanting and people are walking off like it's like they have all this power and this guy can fly and he just rips the helicopter out of the sky. It's a great opening sequence, and then he's just so weird when he comes in. He comes in to see Shuri and Queen Ramonda as they're like doing their sort of ritual thing away from the city, and he packs a punch, like, and makes an impression on them. They're like, I don't know who this guy is, but we know he means business because he brought the machine there. They're like, how did he get this there? He flew in with he has the weirdest, like,
ankle wings.
Like, it doesn't make any sense, but it's cool. Yeah, it looks like he's mostly been in like Hispanic, maybe Mexican TV. And yeah, he's a Mexican actor. So this maybe is, other than Narcos Mexico, was maybe like one of his first like sort of crossovers into American cinema. But he was great.
No, I thought the character himself was very interesting.
Yeah.
I think and they're obviously going to, like, there's no doubt they're making a trilogy of him. There's no doubt. This is like when Black Panther was introduced in Civil War.
Yeah.
This is like that type of introduction. But I think to have him started out as a villain is great, because in the comics he was also a villain. Then he was also a hero. And you have him going back and forth throughout different runs and series.
And you can understand, like, his logic, which was the same thing with Killmonger.
Yeah.
Like, it was like, he was like, no, he kind of framed it like, we don't have a choice. Like, this is what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. So we have to do it this way. But then you could also see, like, how much he was willing to, like, he was only willing to work with the Wakandans if they worked with him. And he was willing to, like, ruin them in order to protect. So he went to an extreme, and he didn't try to solve things maybe through a more diplomatic manner, like the Wakandans mm-hmm. had tried to do. So he kind of had to. So then eventually you see these two countries who really could be helping each other, and they're just like weakening each other through fighting at the end. But he was like, if you put yourself in his shoes and saw his experience, what they really tried to like flesh out, then you could be like, for a second, you'd be like, maybe I understand why he's doing this. And then you realize, like, oh, yeah, this is definitely wrong.
Yeah, no, I think his backstory was fascinating. It was like, I know you have that typical, you know, little kid see something traumatic type of thing. That's typical. But I think, like, his mom and finding that god and, like, the water god or something, and then they all of a sudden have to breathe. They can't breathe air and oxygen in the air. They have to go to the oxygen in the water.
You're like, how'd they figure that out?
I don't know. Yeah.
Fast enough. They're like,
I don't know.
Oh, I can't breathe. Let me jump in the water.
They're like, I'm blue. I must go to the water. But it was interesting. But there was something that I noticed. So at the end of the movie, when Namor's talking with like that, the other girl, the Atlantean or whatever, and there was a mural on the wall and it showed Bast, which is the Black Panther god, fighting their god. So I think they're going to go at war with Wakanda again.
Interesting.
Because I think Wakanda doesn't know about their god, and I think their god hates Bast, which is the Wakandan god.
Wait, so who are you talking about, like, their god? Like, so this is not...
The god is the one that gave them their powers. So, Namor is also separately a mutant.
All right.
So he's a mutant. So
there's somebody who gave them their powers, but also...
No, someone who made their race.
Okay.
So, like, remember when they all turned blue, that was that god.
Okay.
But then Namor's also a mutant, like the X-Men.
And so these are more, like, Eternal-level people or no?
No.
No, okay.
These would be, like, the gods, like Khonshu from Moon Knight, or, like gods have avatars. This has actually been continuity over multiple things in Marvel right now. So, like, the avatar of Khonshu is Moon Knight, and then, like, the avatar of Bast is the Black Panther.
Okay.
And then, like, you have the avatar of, I guess Namor would be of whatever their water god is. I don't know what the actual logic of it is, but that's...
So it's like human's not a good term. Well, I guess maybe it is a good term. Like, they're human form.
Yeah, but the interesting thing is, in Thor Love and Thunder, when they go to that Olympus, there's all those gods there and Bast is there. So it's like interesting. I don't know how they're gonna tie it all together, all these different realms. And this is another part we're talking about, that world building. They built, like, in every show they built a new world. Like, there's like a whole Noor realm with Miss Marvel. There's like the Moon Knight afterlife realm. There's like all these new. And how are they gonna do anything with these connectivities? And then now they're going to the quantum realm.
Yeah. Yeah, oh, and the Ant-Man trailer was... I was like, man, we're going to be in for something way different than the other Ant-Man movies. This is nothing like
what they've done
before. Yeah, there's stakes. There's all kinds of stuff. Yeah, I think that's... I mean, this is reaches back to what is the appeal of Marvel. It's this... I think it really is, how are they going to take all of this stuff and try to make it all fit together? Because it's like... I mean, comic books are like separate universes, and then all of a sudden they're like, well, let's try to combine them all. And then you're like, well, how do you figure out who's more powerful? And there's all these things to like try to work out and make logical. And so it's like a puzzle, and I think that's why people have like been so drawn into this. So that's why it's natural to be like, oh, we're just gonna keep making content, because that's sort of like the model of what you do with comics. It's just whether that really plays out well in a like cinematic form is what we're learning. yeah. now. It worked well in the first, like, up to Infinity War, I think.
Yeah.
But it's just in this new way they're doing it.
You also have the real world realm in She-Hulk, where she can just go and change the script of any show. So in the next endgame level battle, she can just change the script and we'll be good.
Wait, I see. I had no idea. That's how that works.
Mm-hmm.
So she like works for Marvel?
No, she goes into the writer's room and changes the script.
In Oh my. So they broke the fourth wall?
They broke the fourth wall throughout the whole show.
Oh my goodness. What the?
It's super frustrating.
It's
so frustrating to know two things about She-Hulk. One, when I'm watching Iron Man, I have to understand in the same universe, 10 years from now, after Tony Stark gets kidnapped, or 10 or 15 years from now, there's going to be a girl Hulk that's twerking with Megan Thee Stallion.
Oh my.
And that this girl Hulk somehow, unbeknownst to everybody else, can break the fourth wall of reality and change the script of reality. And yeah. everything's just a script. That means in MCU canon, Tony Stark's whole story throughout all of the movies is just a script.
Yeah. Well, welcome to actual reality, Zach.
No.
That is true.
No. Just not acceptable.
No, I do kind of hate that they did that, though. I mean, I'm a huge fan of, like, parody and meta stuff, but, like, it doesn't make any sense in this context.
And it didn't add anything.
No, it doesn't add anything.
It just ruined.
It's just sort of like, oh, we got to do this because it's cool. It's not cool.
I make better scripts in the toilet than She-Hulk. That's the thing. It's just so annoying.
That's great.
But, yeah. I mean, what things do you think went wrong, though?
Went wrong? So a lot of the complaints, and I say this like I talk to a ton of people about this, but I feel like the last act of the movie and sort of shifted away from some of the – maybe not the entire last act, but – it kind of ended like any Marvel movie in that there was a huge fight and they had to figure out all this stuff, and it sort of ended somewhat predictably. And there was a lot of – really the whole plot line with Martin Freeman and Julia, the lady from Seinfeld,
yeah.
was kind of like felt super unnecessary throughout the whole thing. And it was probably just there to like add continuity between like – the Black Panther and other shows, and to just have a little bit of like, oh, we're gonna touch base with the US and see what they think about the Black Panther.
Sure.
And it really didn't add anything to the movie. It was just served for plot building, which they have to do in Marvel movies, but I think in this movie it felt like they really could have like cut down on a few things and it would have felt really focused and maybe would have taken it to the next level of like cinema or like
next level of cinema
of artisticism, or I'm not even using real
next level
anymore.
Of artisticism.
You heard it here, folks. Next level of artisticism. No, but it feels like something that they were, that Kevin Feige walked in the room and was like, okay, so here's my add-ins. You're gonna have to figure out how to add it this thing and this thing into the movie.
Yeah.
And I love your script, Ryan, but this is gonna have to go in here somewhere. So that's my Kevin Feige impression. I don't know if that's how those conversations go. Do you see what I'm saying, though?
Like, yeah, no, I see it.
It got a little muddled, maybe.
No, I agree. I think they put Martin Freeman in there because he was in the first Black Panther.
Right.
Maybe for the white audience appeal.
Yeah.
I'm just joking.
We got to have one white person. We feel so bad for the white people. They have no representation.
That's a complete joke. But no, I think they put him in there just because the Thunderbolts is coming up at the end of beginning of Phase 5 or end of Phase 4. Or end of Phase 5 or beginning of Phase 6. And I think the Seinfeld girl.
Julia Louise Dreyfus. That's her real name. I don't have any idea. She's like the director of something.
She's like the Nick Fury of the Thunderbolts.
Really?
So those are like the misfit Avengers. So it'll be like the anti-hero. And do you know who's on it? It's like Yelena. I think... Red Guardian from Black Widow.
Oh, okay.
There's a whole bunch. And then Bucky will be on it.
Oh, okay.
So
it'll be kind of cool.
Yeah, there'll be a bunch of people.
And she's sort of like set up like the... Really, it's supposed to show like Martin Freeman trusts the Wakandans and other people within the government don't necessarily trust them. So when they see, they're just like assuming that the Wakandans did certain things. And then they bust Martin Freeman for... having illegal contact with them, and then they and Okoye and Churi breaks him out of.
Yeah, that was so unnecessary. That was world building, and then or that was setting up for other projects. Yeah. The other thing that was setting up for other projects was Ironheart. So even though she was an integral plot device, she was the MacGuffin, basically. She was the scientist that the that the Atlanteans, whatever,
Talokanis. They never like really showed how she did it, but yeah, you're right. She's kind of a MacGuffin.
The Talokanis wanted. The only thing that is a little also frustrating is like this little girl is like smarter than Tony Stark.
It's the most unrealistic. Like that's when it's like, okay, like everyone loves a story. But then I realize I say this and literally what is all of superhero movies?
I know, but
it's just people doing things that are completely unrealistic. So I shouldn't get mad about this.
Even but when the characters are human, though.
Yeah.
When the characters are human,
but
we can't.
Tony Stark is human, and there's probably no way that anybody does what Tony Stark does.
No, but this girl's like 19 years old.
True. I mean, I guess you expect her to have a little bit.
It's like if Black Widow started beating up Thor.
Right. It's like, at least have her graduated from MIT, right?
Okay, sure.
That way you're like, okay, she's... Because you're supposed to believe that she learned all this by, like, working on car parts.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't think people get, like... I mean, she's really bright, but I don't know that you just, like... If I gave Zach a car to work on, I don't think he would have turned into...
No, that, I wouldn't even know how to fix the car.
No, he probably wouldn't have got nowhere. But, yeah, I guess we just have to suspend our disbelief on that one and just enjoy the ride
and not on anything else.
I think she might be the Shuri of this movie, where I like kind of didn't like her that much. Mm-hmm. But maybe as she gets fleshed out in other movies, I'll get more of an appreciation for her. There was some cool scenes, like when she was escaping and Shuri, like that was cool.
Yeah.
Sort of like, wow, like this girl, she's 18 and they're like trying to kill her, like, oh my goodness, that would be scary if you were an 18-year-old.
I mean, kind of, but the thing is, like, They could have just picked an object that the Talokanis were coming after.
True.
But they chose her. So at least they tried to make her integral to the plot.
Right.
But the, you know, she just really didn't fit.
No, yeah, it was.
And it's for her show coming up, you know, Ironheart.
Right.
So
hopefully that'll be good, but yeah, I mean, she didn't really fit.
But I think what it was is shoving in a few things. But I think they worked with they were on theme, at least the things that they shoved in with the Thunderbolts and Ironheart. But I do agree it could have been more focused, because it really is, this whole movie is about grief.
Yeah.
And how to work with that. It's kind of like WandaVision a little bit, except they
don't go crazy. Because Shuri is sort of like her motive for kind of killmongering, or like turning into more of a killmonger, was like, well, these, like, my brother tried to do it the right way and look where that got him, or, you know, that sort of thing. And I need to.
Yeah.
Although I keep forgetting that, like, he didn't necessarily, like, she's not getting vengeance on somebody who killed him or something like that. Like, he died, like,
now. Well, she's trying to kill Namor, who killed her mom.
Okay, yeah. So that's right.
That would
be
vengeance.
Yeah, that would be vengeance. I was like, there was some angle of vengeance. I was just missing exactly what it was.
But yeah, so I think that was, for me, the coolest part of the movie was when Killmonger was there. He's like, are you going to be like your brother, or are you going to be like me? Your brother was too noble, he said. But so I think she said, you know, I am not my brother, so I'm going to make him, I'm going to kill him or something.
Right.
So, and then she gets to that point. She cuts off one of his ankle wings and then doesn't kill him.
Yeah, she doesn't. And she gets, like, stabbed, like, through the chest.
But she has the heart-shaped herb, so she heals right away.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Connor asked the same question.
I was like, this doesn't make any sense.
I was like, come on, guys. It's Marvel 101.
You're going to have to go back through the course. Connor didn't get that.
No, he didn't.
I'm sorry. Connor, you should know that. Yeah. I should have an excuse, but you should know that.
But, yeah, so, I mean, and, you know, the heart-shaped herb stuff, it, you know, it's just back now. That's just how stuff is. That's how Marvel works.
It's synthetic. Synthetic heart-shaped herb.
Sure. It's probably better.
And with her, like, little, like, holographic thing that makes no sense, but...
The 3D printer out of nothing.
Yeah.
It prints... it just creates matter.
Yeah, like, that's... It literally created a plant.
Yeah.
Like, I wish I had a 3D printer that could do that.
Me too. But, yeah. I any other things that did not work for the plot or the movie?
Well, I think one of the things that stood out was in some of the damage, I was like, they really should have called an insurance company.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Who could they have called?
Well, they could have called Henman Angle an agency. Like, when some of the cars wrecked and stuff.
Oh yeah.
They were like, oh, it's too bad these cars wrecked, or like they fixed the car at the end, but did they fix that with their own money? Maybe they could have gotten an insurance claim on that car, the old I forget what model it was.
That's why the Wakandans are so rich. They save money.
They save money. They probably have a contract with Hedman.
Do you know who insures all of Wakanda?
Hedman Angled Agency.
Yes.
Yes, they do. And you can call them. It's the same number the Wakandans called them from.
Yes.
It's 614-486-7300. 614-486-7300. And the Wakandans haven't called us in to get their cardboard cutout. Because
they don't use iPhones. They're too primitive.
Yeah. They're sticking with their tradition, so no iPhones. But you can still have it. So make sure you tell them if you call their number and get a good estimate and save some money.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll be on your way to getting a cardboard cutout of us and having more money.
Free trip to Wakanda.
Free trip to Wakanda too. And you can invest that money in Elon Musk, Elon Goat Coin, which I saw was going up this week on Twitter, which has been a crazy place. And then you can make a lot of money, or you can lose all of it.
Twitter is like the Badlands right now.
Yeah, it's like $8 for, we could get a check mark.
Should we?
For like $8, we probably should.
Let's do it.
And we should just start commenting on random stuff. I feel like everything on Twitter is controversial. I don't mean controversial stuff, just like random stuff.
No, like, let's do controversial stuff. Let's do it. Let's comment, right? Let's DM Elon and say something.
Yeah. Well, we should just see whether Elon will come on. I think there's a path. There's a path to get Elon Musk on the podcast.
We have to get him right when he's canceled.
No, like, so he was on, he's on Babylon Bee's podcast, right?
Yes.
So, and I'm not even saying we could get somebody from Babylon Bee on, but like that, I mean, just right there, that's like a better odds of getting them on than like a bunch of people. Like if you network your way up through the chain and then you gain enough notoriety, you get Elon Musk on. Now the question is, like, for us, would it really would it hurt us more than it would benefit us to have Elon? It would probably benefit us a lot.
Who cares? We're neutral. We're Joe Rogans.
That's true. We are Joe Rogans when it comes to stuff.
I could care absolutely less about Twitter. Here's the thing.
We have Elon Musk on to review Iron Man. And we talk
Iron Man 2, you mean?
Or Iron Man 2. Well,
cuz he's in that.
Either one, cuz the character is allegedly based on him. So,
yeah, and that's, but he could talk movie. About his appearance in 2.
His appearance? Yeah, we could just like analyze it with him, like, what was it like? He would love that. He has to like Elon,
smoke
if you're
a little weed.
Okay, well, I guess if he wanted to, that'd be fine. I'm probably not going to partake in that. That is true. That when I first listened to Joe Rogan, like way back when, like 5 years ago or so, that was one of the episodes that I was like, this is crazy. Man, this is wild. And that's just like, okay.
Do you think that was like a stepping stone for Elon's spontaneity?
I don't know. Was he always like that? Like, I feel like that was definitely... Stock, like, dip because of that?
Every Tesla is based on his personality and what he talks about.
I know.
Day by day.
There's always this debate. Now we're getting really into the weeds, but about whether Elon Musk, like, earned any of the stuff he did or whether he just sort of... But then the question is anybody who's a billionaire, like, earn their way? Like,
I think Elon, because he created PayPal in college.
Yeah, but he created PayPal with a bunch of other people. So
with like a few other guys that were the brainchild.
And they're all like successful too. Like some of the guys who made PayPal like invented YouTube. Like these guys were like top notch.
Yeah, but he was in that group. So I'm saying like he was top notch too.
Exactly. And he, you know, everyone says like, oh, these people don't invent things. Well, maybe they're not like, they're not necessarily inventors. They're like connectors. They make things happen through their charisma, which is like a weird thing to think about. But
like Elon has so many companies that I don't know what they're doing right now. You know, the Boring Company and the tunnel, you know, the tunnels.
I guess then you just have a bunch of like money, throwaway money.
Yeah, but like they're not doing any, like, are we supposed to have tunnels underground? When is that going to happen?
That's the idea. That it's a cool idea. I just don't know whether it would ever work.
I don't think he's
like,
done anything
so,
with it.
So the idea is you have a tunnel from like, I think the San Francisco to LA. They were talking about one that goes from like Pittsburgh through Columbus, Indianapolis into Chicago. And it would change everything because like, or would it? Well, theoretically, if you could get this to work, it would change everything. Because you could live in Columbus and commute to Chicago and actually it'd be realistic. Like you get up, go to the tunnel station every day. You, it's like the bank thing. It's like it just goes and you're in Indianapolis for a second, and then
like it's a tube and it just sucks.
Now the question is, how many people are going to be able to fit in this tube? And like,
will they have sizes for different people?
Yeah, and how would they have multiple? Like, would they just have to fit like hundreds of people on one, or like, are they having like a bunch of little tubes?
You wear
like
a suit that has hand sanitizers on the outside of it, so that as you go, the next person doesn't get your germs.
No, well, I don't know. They're worried about germs as much. I'm talking about like,
that's what I was worried about.
They're little. Like, you're in the, there's only one tunnel, so you can only have one, the tube can only be going one way, right?
You vibrate at a different frequency and go through each other.
That might work, I guess.
String theory.
Yeah. It's always good when you bring string theory into it. That's what I say.
I bet you Elon's like, let's do that. Let's put people on Mars and crack string theory open.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure if he could figure out a way to make teleportation, he would be trying to do that. So, I mean, that kind of is like you're going through people. Like, I don't know.
I just think Elon has all these big ideas. I just haven't seen anything amazing yet.
Yeah, no. Ever since, what's the last big thing he did? Take over Tesla? Which he didn't really invent Tesla. He just took it over. He's made it successful, though. Yeah, Cybertruck. Nothing happened with that either.
When's
the Cybertruck coming out? So maybe, well, I guess he took over Twitter now. That's his latest thing.
When's that going to get better?
I mean, yeah,
seems like it's the Badlands.
It's like the Badlands right now. He's doing like open source, like so instead of having like teams of people who like correct stuff, it's like open source. So like it's like Wikipedia. I saw him tweet something about it. I didn't really do that much research.
It's interesting because I don't appreciate the fact checkers. I really don't. But I also don't appreciate just free willy-nilly everything.
Yeah, because I could just go on Twitter. If Twitter had no regulation at all, I could just go on and say like a bunch of stuff. People could start panicking. I could be like, there's this terrorist thing happening in this city, and like get a bunch of retweets and people would be like, oh my gosh, like what's going on? And they'd be scared and yeah, like, true. And there'd be no consequences for that. I mean, there might be
someone tweets fire.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about. So there's got to be some regulation. I mean, obviously there has to be regulation. I mean, 8chan and 4chan are just disasters of places. They're horrible. Yeah. Like, so you have to have regulations.
What's
just
the one that Tim
it?
Dillon didn't want to go on?
It was one of those.
No, it was something else.
One of those. I think I don't even. Yeah. I don't. There's a lot of places on the internet that like they tried to do this like complete free speech thing, and it's like a disaster. Like you don't want absolute complete free speech because it just leads to bad things. That's not to say I don't believe in the First Amendment, but there has to be regulation on some things.
I was trying to look. So Curtis Yarvin is on The Political Theorist. I can't remember what he's on. He's on some kind of Substack. People are on Substack now. That's what it was.
Oh, Substack.
But it's not that as popular as other as 4chan was.
Yeah.
That's the thing. So it's like interesting to see these people blogging on these websites.
I mean, 4chan was influential because like music was super music listening. There's a whole like Moo Core was like all from 4chan. So yeah. Substack.
Yeah, no.
Substack. Curtis Yarvin, he is a wild guy.
Crazy.
He's crazy. And his story wasn't even interesting.
What was it? The acid story?
That was the lamest story of all time. Oh my goodness. And he took it forever.
It was like a 5-minute story. Yeah. And he was talking for 2 hours.
Yeah. He was like, he just went in the theater and did acid. That was the story, wasn't it?
With a girl, yeah.
Did anything else happen?
No. Nothing else happened. And the worst part is he kept going on these things like, what is the new cathedral and what do we all worship these days in technology and the media and how is everybody political analyzing everything? And his theories are so interesting, but it's like, this isn't what we came to listen to.
Well, I almost wonder like whether the acid story is like a MacGuffin. Like it's like,
do you think they planned that?
Yeah. Do you think they planned the acid story to be lame on that episode?
No, because I think he was trying to tell it so many times. I think his brain was so fizzled. It was so sporadic and spontaneous.
Because this guy, like, he was involved in some of the, like, dot-com era, like, things. Yeah. And he, like, almost got – well, he might have got rich off of something, I think. Yeah. And then he, like, lost the money. I forget. It was all kinds of stuff. He was so all over the place. Curtis Yarvin, if you want to look into him.
Look into him, please.
Weird.
He's one of the, I mean, he's one of the faces of the early internet. So
yeah, one of the forefathers. You can blame him for stuff, I guess.
Sure.
But I guess back to Black Panther.
Sure, why not?
Which almost has nothing to do with any of the stuff that we had just been talking about.
Yeah.
Other than, like, maybe they are having to deal with some of these things in Wakanda. Like, how do we go about Twitter and all of that?
What do you think Wakandans would be? What do you think?
I don't think they would be very. I mean, I think they would be like, they'll have like a national. They wouldn't really let their like citizens go on Twitter because it would be like.
Do you think they have all the freedom in Wakanda?
That's a, I don't know. What is the what, like, are regular Wakandans allowed to like travel out of Wakanda? Are you trapped like, there? Are you like a prisoner?
So it doesn't seem like the people necessary. That like, there's not elections.
No,
because yeah. it's elder-led country.
System. Yeah.
So
then they have a, well, they do have like a king.
Well, try. Yeah. The king is like over the elder thing, but the elders make the decisions and each elder comes from a different tribe.
Right. Cause the Black Panther is more of like the protector.
Sure.
Right. Okay.
So, but like Queen Ramonda in this movie, like she would have had maybe the final say.
Right.
Because she's from the royal line.
She's like the chief justice. Is that a bad comparison?
That is a terrible comparison. But, yeah, maybe. Yeah, I don't know how else to relate that. Maybe, like, she's the secret behind-the-scenes Saudi Arabians, and the royal family is the elders, and then the congregation is England and the Middle East.
So it certainly doesn't seem like the people, like, have a constitution, and it's, like, a big thing.
No.
Like the Bill of Rights.
But you have to also understand, it's a theocracy.
Yeah.
Because they worship a god, Baas.
True.
So if they worship their god and they all believe in him, except for Shuri apparently, then they operate and have things in certain structures and certain
right. ways. Yeah, it would be kind of a theocracy. That's a good point. And, well, it's sort of set up as it's kind of a utopia too. So it's like you wouldn't necessarily want the system to be any different because it's like a great system.
Why do you think that – so this is MCU specific, by the way, that it's portrayed as such a utopia? In the comics, there are many problems with Wakanda. It's great. It's highly technological, but it's like there's a lot of problems, like internal problems. Whereas in the MCU, it's this safe haven of perfection.
Yeah.
Everybody gets along. Everybody's a unit. The only things that are bad are outsiders.
So they're like external. It's like all of the conflict is not really... Other than Killmonger, right? That was like the internal sure. conflict.
And the internal conflict, yes. Okay, you're right. Because T'Challa's dad, T'Chaka, was the reason that Killmonger was out in the world. Because he killed his own brother.
Right.
And that was wrong of him. So there was some sin going on inside of
yeah.
Wakanda. But it's like, other than that, it really is this utopia. Why do you think?
I think it's a sort of... So I think it has to do with the genre, and I'm not really familiar with this genre, so I'll kind of keep it general. It's like Afrofuturism.
Yeah.
So it's sort of saying, if left untouched, because Africa was colonized by many different European countries. I think Ethiopia was the only country that like withstood being colonized, and there's maybe even, I know the Italians were like trying to attack them and all that. I haven't gone over this part of history since like mm-hmm. eighth grade, so it's very rusty. Mm-hmm. But I know that most of Africa was colonized. Many Africans were deported as slaves to North and South America. Mm-hmm. So we have all of this stuff. So this is sort of like, Wakanda is like the area of Africa that was left untouched. Like what could have happened if none of these terrible things happened in Africa? Like as relating to Europeans like colonizing and enslaving Africans. So I think that's kind of why it's definitely like a sensitive subject and a touchy subject. So it would be kind of, at least when they're first introducing it, maybe it would be like, we want to introduce it in like the most positive light that we can,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to like making it like, there's so much internal conflict in all of this.
Sure.
But maybe as it goes on and progresses, there could be more room for like exploring. Because even though this is like a great safe haven and all of that, everyone knows that with humans there would always be conflict of some kind. It's just like mostly it's being shown as external versus internal, which we definitely know that would be a conflict. The one thing though that I kind of have always been like, well, why'd they set it up this way was like with vibranium,
because
it kind of implies that like the only reason that they're great is because they have vibranium.
Yeah.
which I think is like a little unfair. I think they maybe try to show that that's not the case.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of very like intelligent, like educated people like Shuri who are they've learned how to use the technology mm-hmm. and all of that. So obviously it wouldn't be like you just have vibranium, like you could just use it to make like Captain America shields and that is it. You wouldn't be able to harness it for anything else. So obviously we know it's not just because of the vibranium, but it's like you could also maybe set up somewhere where it's like they didn't even have anything. They were just like untouched and they like kind of naturally went about, but that's how they protected themselves, I guess. So that's kind of why they have to use the vibranium is that. What do you think?
No, you're right, by the way. I mean, and I think it is clear throughout the movie, like that is what they're portraying is uncolonized part of Africa, right? Whether you agree with whatever side, there's not even really sides.
It's no, like there's not really a side on that.
It's a history. There's a history. It's whatever you think about it.
Yeah.
So it's like, yes, that is what they're portraying. That is what the comics were portraying when they made the Black Panther comics. So uncolonized Africa. Now, another reason why I think this movie is diving deep into this and why I think Ryan Coogler is particularly doing this is because of the setting in Haiti. So you have people, everybody speaking French in Haiti, right?
Yeah.
The French colonizers, stuff like that. You know, they have Creole and French are the two. I just looked it up too. I knew French was one of them. I couldn't remember Creole. Are the two languages in Haiti. And you have to think like, well, that's now where Nakia is spending her time in that same way. So it's just like another hidden theme of like colonization. And then it's not even hidden. You know, they call Everett Ross a colonizer.
Yeah, it's like a joke.
And a colonizer in chains. Oh, yeah. I have seen everything.
And it's like, it is funny. You're like, that's, yeah. It's like, you think, oh, that's, it was a funny joke.
Sure.
Well,
yeah. I mean, that is just what they were trying to portray.
So
I mean I don't know. We'll see.
I know some of this stuff like it can be sort of like how you look back at history and view like and think how should we change things based on what has already happened. That's kind of where the discrepancy is, because I think hopefully overall there's a consensus that a lot of the things that happened were wrong. It's more just like what do we do now that it's happened. But I think this movie does an okay job of like kind of addressing things without maybe, you know, stepping on too many like landmines, and it at least, you know, will always give you something to think about, which is like I think with movies usually the best movies don't necessarily spill out the answers for you because then they feel preachy, but they kind of like get you to think about things.
Yeah.
So
I will say Everett did nothing to them. Everett's been only nice to them.
So right.
He doesn't deserve to be picked on like that. He didn't enslave anyone.
No, he
but
did not.
That those things did happen. So it is sad that they happened, but Everett did not do anything to anyone. Okay.
Yeah. So very true.
Ancestor sins don't pass down like that. Like in this world, it's just how it is. But yeah. So all that being aside, I'm glad you caught up on those concepts, because the Afrofuturism is a theme not only in Black Panther. It's a theme in a lot of Western art these days, especially in the past two decades.
I think I'd even seen another movie that had come out recently. I think it was called like Neptune Forest or something. And I only saw like the title, so I'm looking it up now. That was sort of like the same idea. It maybe came out last year. Neptune Frost. It's like Afro
Neptune Forest.
It's an Afro futuristic movie. So this is definitely like it wasn't that popular, so I'm not even sure how I heard about this, but it's definitely like a genre. I guess it got pretty highly rated. A genre that you will be seeing more of. So that'll be interesting. But I think you're right. In art and lots of things, it's becoming definitely a topic that's important.
Even in people just look into commercials for iPhones, for Chick-fil-A is the one example that I picked that's not correct. Literally any commercials, you'll have Afrofuturism in it, some type of, not like any, but like a lot of them, you'll have some type of Afrofuturism, just a hint of it. And this isn't like BLM type of stuff. I'm talking about like a perfect picture painted of Africa untouched.
Yeah.
You have this in many different types of marketing, and it's just being integrated very fast by lots of different companies.
Yeah.
So.
And then it remains to be seen. I feel pretty good about this movie because Ryan Coogler made it, and I like based on his other work, I feel like he has a pretty good sense about these things. But sometimes with the marketing side of things, there's always this sort of shady, like, people are sort of maybe in an ironic sense exploiting some of these ideas too. So you have to be on guard about that sort of thing, because market companies that are selling products definitely have a lot of incentive to be jumping on social trends and stuff. So I would just warn people about being overly enthusiastic about some of these things, because they have to know that there's sort of an angle, that everyone has a little bit of an angle, and certainly not all of these companies are driven completely by people who are always looking out for the best.
What, Chipotle's on Team Edward?
Yeah.
I'm going to them now. Wow.
Yeah. And a lot of this is like, yeah, there's a lot of discussions that could be had, but I think that pretty well covers it.
Yeah.
If you disagree with us at all, I don't know that we said anything that you could, I don't know. But just email us at themovievaultpod@gmail.com, and we'd love to
please do
think about it.
What we'll you have think to say. About it. Ben and I will each meditate on it.
Yeah.
And we will float. We've learned how to do it with lots of string.
Yeah, we have like a clear swing.
We have to take turns because we have a pulley system.
Yeah. I'm getting used to this having a visual.
Yeah. Ben's been putting on a lot of weight, so, and I've been losing a lot of muscle, so.
Yeah.
His turn, it really is
annoying. Yep. But. All right. Well, I guess we should close the vault.
Sure.
What should we?
How about, no, that's cheesy. I was about to say Wakanda Forever, but that's really cheesy.
What else were we gonna say?
wait, what's the cringy thing that Shuri said? Oh, that she was changing.
Ibombe.
Ibombe.
Ibombe. Ibombe.